Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think it's an exciting opportunity for us to now sort of set off on a new direction. Play football and a great environment that embodies the values and traditions of this fantastic football club.
Bentancourt!
Through for Pedro Toro, and he smashed it in!
Oh, that's a great stop from Vicario.
And Kulusevski rolls it in!
Ben Davies!
And a shot from the sun goes on, and scores! Richarlison! And it ended up in the back of the net. Here is Lo Celso, freshly introduced and scoring!
Chance for Solomon! That is quite something from James Maddison.
Hello and welcome to The Last Word on Spurs, your award-winning Tottenham Hotspur podcast. We are back. Busy, busy month for The Last Word on Spurs. We don't stop. It is absolutely relentless during this January transfer window in which we give an opportunity, look, to bring on a number of real top-tier journalists onto the show to get their thoughts on the window and beyond of that. Of course, this start under Ange Postecoglou. This man has been on many, many occasions, and I've always told him now that before this show, it's going to be the most positive that he's ever done on Last Word on Spurs. Given the fact the last few times we've had this man on, whether it's been the summer windows and the January windows, there's been the frantic desperation. We have to sign players. We need to get players over the line. What is going on? Why are we not backing the manager? Well, look, I think it's fair to say we've all been pleasantly surprised so far by what this window has brought. Spurs, of course, the only club in the Premier League to have made two signings so far. So it gives me my pleasure to welcome back to Last Word on Spurs, Chief Sports Football Reporter Martin Lipton is back. Martin, lovely to have you here. How are you?
I'm extremely well, Ricky. Yes. I would say the sun's out because it's not at the moment. It's pitch dark. But you know what I mean? It feels like it's metaphorically shining at least. Which has not always been the case over the last few years. So long may that remain.
Yes, I agree. Look, we're both actually recording in pretty much darkness here, but we have got the beaming lights of Ange Postecoglou and Spurs to most certainly make us feel very much at home at the moment. And you know what? I love talking to journalists like you that have been around the football club for many, many years and have experienced many different managers, many different players, many different eras at Tottenham. And it feels at the moment that we're on to potentially a really, really good time. But if I take your mind back, Martin, to the summer, Spurs losing Harry Kane, a summer really in which we're trying to find the right manager, despite being linked with a whole host of many. Arne Slot, many thought we had the job, although then he turned us down, what we hear reportedly. We then land at the feet of Ange Postecoglou. Take me back to the summer in your mind of Spurs and what you were feeling before Ange was appointed as a Spurs head coach.
Well, I was quite positive about Slot, I have to say. Likewise, if they'd gone for Nagelsmann, it was a sort of appointment that made a degree of sense. What you needed was a project manager, which I think Slot probably would have been, and Postecoglou certainly is. If we go back to the Pochettino appointment, he wasn't the first choice. That was Van Gaal. And the second choice turned out quite good, really. And likewise, whether Postecoglou was third, second, fourth, it doesn't matter. What matters is he absolutely fits like a glove, I'd say, what the club needed and wanted. And he's been a refreshing breath of fresh air. He's given the attitude that I think everyone wanted to see. And you only have to go to the stadium to feel the mood has changed so completely from the frustration, angst, anger, indignation, etc., that was boiling away and then exploded in the last couple of months of last season. And what you have now, which is a United fan base, a sense of direction, a belief in the squad and the managers, the profile of the team changing markedly. And while football is a fickle mistress, as we know, everything does seem set fair, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, you know what reminds me, and again, Martin, when obviously Ange got the job, many, I feel, just forget of just what an absolute basket case he was walking into. And I mean that in the most, how can I put that, the most politeful way of saying that, because the club just seemed an utter mess. There wasn't a recruitment team. You had the situation of Harry Kane's future hanging over whoever's going to get the job's head. We had players there that arguably didn't want to be there. There was a real need to replenish a squad that, as we saw under Conte and Mourinho, really needed to be changed. I mean, just how big a job, Martin, was Ange or the manager that was going to be taking the job going to have on their hands coming into the summer, do you feel?
Well, I mean, the biggest issue was trying to cope with the frustrations of everyone. You know, the Conte inflicted implosion helped nobody. The sense of dread and inertia was around. Nobody was enjoying going. I think most fans were desperate for the season to end. And therefore, they weren't particularly excited about the season to start because of all the issues. Well, you know, it took a long time to get the manager appointed. Not as long as maybe in the past, but long enough. And it looked as though the recruitment of players was a bit haphazard. And there was all this, you know, long-standing effort to try and get David Raya. And then in the end, they turned to somebody who I don't think too many people had heard of. There wasn't a great deal known about the centre-half who was coming in. They're getting Solomon for next to nothing from Shakhtar. Yes, they got Maddison. Great. That's a good signing. But what else? Who's going to score goals? If, you know, what about Kane? What if he goes? Are they going to cope without him? And when Kane then does go 2 days before the start of the season, I think the mood plunged even further, despite all the positivity of the pre-season performances. You know, the previous Sunday, he'd scored four and they put five past Shakhtar and looked really good. Yeah. They looked really good in the second half.
They did.
It was like, oh, this could be quite fun. And then suddenly the bloke who's going to score all the goals isn't there. And no one knows if anyone's going to score any goals. And so there was a sense of, I'm not saying doom and despair, but people were thinking, well, top six would be something. It'd be quite good, wouldn't it, really? And I think that's the difference, that now people are thinking, well, top four is a genuine, reasonable and absolute aspiration. And if they were to miss out, there'd be a sense of disappointment now, which is it shows how much it's changed in a few short months. And that's down to the manager who has got hold of it and shaken it really hard and is getting what he wants. Look, we've been extremely fortunate. Not every transfer works in football. And yet this window, they pretty much all have. You know, even Solomon before I got injured was looking quite good.
Yep.
Udogie has been absolutely brilliant. And we never knew whether he'd be able to grasp it so young, just have, you know, in his early 20s, having had that extra season in Udinese. Sarr's come back and suddenly looks like a football player, which is really good. Van de Ven's been brilliant. Vicario's been outstanding. Best keeper, arguably, in the Premier League. I think I'd have him behind Alisson, but he's certainly in the top two. And it suddenly feels so, so different, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, I mean, even the mood around the place, Martin, you know, Andrew refers to it as a nightclub. It has been rocking in there several times. I just wonder, you know, you talk about pre-season and we cast our mind back. And, you know, even on that first game of pre-season, I remember the West Ham game, Spurs actually lost it. And even at that game, there was just a feeling, we're going to have some fun this season. We're not sure what's going to happen. I think many, and I used that word earlier, transitional, the T word. I mean, again, with those words of transitional comes odd results, comes obviously peaks and obviously lows. And look, this season we've had a mixed range of results, but I think anyone who has said Spurs would be where they are now, the 8 points off the top of the league, obviously 3 points off the respective top four. I think many would have bitten your arm off for it when you consider how they had to navigate the injuries, the suspensions, the international absences now that they're facing. But I just wonder, how early on, Martin, did you just feel Ange was the right fit for the football club?
Well, I was really pleased with the way they approached the early season games. The thing I liked best about him, probably most people won't even remember, and it wasn't necessarily what people would have seen as a positive. So, first game of the season, we go to Brentford. It's going to be a tough game. Romero scores. He's your best defender. And he takes him off straight away because he looked at him and says, he's not right. I can't risk that player for one result. And I thought that was a really, really, A, brave. It's not something you'd normally expect a manager to do, because most managers ignore players whose legs are falling off. They just want them on the pitch.
That's true. Very true.
And probably if their heads were falling off, they still want them on the pitch. And he said, no, he's not right. I'm not having him on the pitch. I'm not going to risk him. And I thought that was actually fascinating, because that was a sign of someone who thinks, this is a long haul. We're here together as a unit, and I have a duty of care to these players, and I'm going to defend and protect these players. And protecting these players also includes making sure they're not on the pitch when they shouldn't be on the pitch. And I thought that was really insightful. And then you get the series of results. You know, the United game could have gone either way, but they took the chances and won it. And then you get the propulsion and the sense of, this is quite fun. You know, go and score, go and beat Bournemouth quite well, score five at Burnley. And you're getting a sense then that actually this is better than you anticipated it was going to be. And then you get the run of results. You know, the Liverpool game, for all the madness and the drama of it, they actually played pretty well.
Yep.
And then, you know, that they have that run where they go to Palace to win 2-1 when it should have been 2-0, because that Palace goal has got to be disallowed. But they find a way to win. And you're getting into 2 months into the season, you're suddenly thinking, we're top of the table here. How did that happen? This is really fun.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the sky fell in. And I'm not sure that many teams could have coped with the entire sky falling in the way that Tottenham had to be here where they are now. And I think that's the really impressive thing of all, is that he doesn't moan about situations he can't resolve. He doesn't start, oh, woe is me, as Mourinho and Conte and others have done in the past. It was, well, these are the cards I've got in my hand. How am I going to play them? And I think that's been the most enjoyable and exciting thing about it, is that he's found a way to get performances, not always results, but performances out of players who you wouldn't have imagined would be able to give those performances. That, you know, when you go 6 weeks or so with Emerson and Davis as your centre-halves, that's pretty tough. And yet, you know, and they...
But even the games
they should have... They lost. There were some of them they could have won. You know, certainly West Ham and Villa are prime examples, were games they probably should have won and just needed that little bit of finishing. And it was a shame because, you know, if Richarlison had that operation maybe a month earlier and been right a month earlier, they'd have won those games because he'd have scored goals in those games. When he was there, he wasn't right. He had the operation, etc. Look at him now. And whilst I don't think he's the absolute answer, and if there's a better one out there, you go and get him, can't argue with the goals he's scoring at the moment, particularly, you know, if he's scoring goals in the absence of Son.
You know what? I have to ask you, Martin, just on that captaincy and the way that was handled, obviously, we had the situation of losing Harry a day before, and then which, obviously, Ange then made that captaincy choice, of course, Sonny, Maddison, and obviously Romero. I just wonder how you felt that was dealt with, because there was that obviously loss of many Spurs fans of the poster boy of the football club. But then the next day to have Sonny named the captain, they're just seeing this instant jubilation and instant almost feeling that we've got the right man to lead this group, because Son on so many occasions has not only stepped up in Harry's absence, but reaffirmed his commitment and his future to the football club. in times where you'd have to question, are you sure? Do you really want to do that? No, so, I mean, how much fascinating is that for you, the way in which they handled that captaincy?
Well, it was done so swiftly. I mean, it had to be, but I do suspect it had been in the ether for some time that, you know, there was an awareness and acceptance that if the right offer came in, how he would go. And it made business sense, commercial sense, and everything else sense. It just maybe didn't necessarily make football sense. And I do wonder, we'll never know, but if they'd held on to him for a year, he just might have signed a new contract by now. But there you go. You weren't to know that. And you can't blame anyone for what happened. But no. Son is a popular player. And the only doubt about that decision was he going to be able to recreate the form of 2 years ago and not be as he was for most of last season with the injury and everything else? He wasn't right. It was crystal abundantly clear he wasn't right. And his return, although he's got a few goals in the second half of the season, he was miles off what he normally would be. But obviously those issues and doubts have been answered fantastically because of, you know, you can't deny 12 goals and all the assists as well. And I think it's just worked really, really well. And you've got a new group within the squad.
Yep.
Giving responsibility to Maddison and Romero is good. You wonder whether Bentancur might have been in that group if he'd been fit at the start of the season. Him coming back into the team has been huge as well, because he's a fabulous player. And look at what he did against United. He was just by so much the best player in the park. It was frightening, actually, albeit Richarlison, I thought, had a fantastic game up there with his effort and commitment. But suddenly you feel like everything, the page has been turned, and it's a positive new chapter from everyone. And that's because atmosphere is different, belief is different, squad is different, manager is different, even, you know, hierarchy, while Daniel's still there, there's a different sort of number of hands and faces being involved in decision making. And everything feels right now. And for years, it's always been a little bit of, you look at the jigsaw puzzle and worked out that most, you know, quite a few of the pieces didn't fit. And now it looks like most of the pieces do fit.
Yeah.
And that makes a huge difference.
It does. I've got a question here, Martin, from another Martin, actually. And you mentioned about the hierarchy there. Martin Coker asked, does Martin think the club's long-term financial strategy is starting to pay dividends with regards to the, obviously, PSR restrictions now on others and not on Spurs at present? What's your thoughts, given the fact, Martin, that Daniel Levy warned us a couple of years ago this was coming, and many fans were dismissive of this because they just felt this was a way in which Daniel was trying to duck spending money on players. What's your feeling now where we are, where bearing in mind Spurs are the only club to have made two signings in the window and very few have done business, as we've seen?
Well, we would have been here 2 years ago if it wasn't for COVID. You've got to remember that, you know, within 6 months of this new stadium open, which was the revenue stream, £6 million every home game, there or thereabouts, the tap was turned off and there was no income. And the debt still had to be paid in terms of the interest on the stadium. And they had to refinance that. And that was a really smart move, because I think it's around £23 million a year they have to pay back in interest. Obviously, the main body of the loan's got to be repaid as well. But it's not that pressing when your interest repayments are relatively low. And this season, I suspect, because of no Europe, they will have a turnover of £400 million-ish, maybe slightly less, but around there. Next season, if they're in the Champions League, that'll be over £500 million.
Mm, yep.
You've got FFP in its various incarnations, the UEFA model, which is now based on percentile of revenue spent on transfers and wages. Now, you know, a lot of clubs are spending nearly all of their revenue on transfers and wages and close to going bust, and Tottenham spend barely, if 50%. So there's a huge amount of leeway and room for Tottenham, financial headroom, I guess the Chancellor would call it, that allows them to really benefit from that. The key is, whatever the regime is, you need to be able to sell players for the right money. And homegrown players in particular are really valuable commodities. It's why Chelsea have been able to spend the sort of money they were able to spend over two windows, because they sold all those homegrown players. And they actually were the real beneficiaries of the transfer ban. The transfer ban meant that Lampard had to play the players 2 years ahead of when he would have thought about it. Because they play Premier League football, their value rocketed, and they were able to sell Tomori and Abraham and Mount and Loftus-Cheek and Hudson-Odoi and others for 200 million quid, which has allowed them to spend the money. Now, I'm not saying you want to be spending 200 million quid's worth of talent every 2 years, but Tottenham's business model, given what we know is coming through, is one that will allow them to sell young, talented, homegrown players who they don't think are quite what they want to buy in the players that they do want. So suddenly, that from being relative paupers compared to many clubs, not compared to Burnley's and Watford's, etc., but compared to the big six, the other big six members, they're in a very, very strong financial position. And it allows long-term decisions as well as short-term decisions to be made. And suddenly it does, it is transformative. And the arguments that were being made by Daniel clearly had merit. And we, anyone who was questioning that can't question it anymore. The issue is where the money is spent. That's a different issue entirely. But isn't it? Biggest one with Spurs wasn't so much the money they were spending, it was who they were spending the money on.
Yes.
Because, absolutely, you know, when your club record signing, well, you've seen the pictures of him playing for Galatasaray. I mean, it would take you 15 minutes to walk round him now, wouldn't it, Ndombele? I mean, it's terrific. But he is probably the least professional footballer I have ever known. Because
it's scary, isn't it? The due diligence piece.
But those are mistakes that were made. And there were warning signs from France, from Lyon, that clearly I didn't realise quite how brightly they were flashing, but they evidently were. And he's not the only one who's been a disappointment. You know, Sanchez didn't quite work out, etc. But as I said, you can't always guarantee. You're not going to get if Spurs make five signings this summer, there's no guarantee they're all going to be successful as the five they made last summer.
Yeah.
But if two or three of them are, you're in a great position. You can afford to get a couple that don't quite work if the 60% plus do work.
Yeah. You know what? You talk about players there. I mean, that 2019 window, that will come back. I mean, it did come back to haunt, unfortunately, Maurizio Pochettino, because you look at that window in general, the sign of Ndombele, Lo Celso, with no disrespect, you know, I keep saying it to Lo Celso, if that guy could play twice a week, it'd be an incredible thing. I mean, you know, the guy seems to be made of glass, and similar to Sessegnon, you know, he's had a real stop-start career at Spurs. Jack Clark has gone on to have a pretty decent career at the moment. He's doing really, really well up at Sunderland. And again, you look at that window and think, many feel that way. If, you know, had Maurizio been given the backing that Ange had got in this summer, what would have happened? But it's hypothetical, right, Martin? It's hard to look at the past and try and project it to today.
If you look at the signings that were made under Maurizio, whoever made them, how many of them would you say were fantastic successes for the money? None of the expensive ones were. The best signings were the cheap signings.
Yes.
You know, talking about Trippier, 3 million or 5 million, whatever it was.
Dele Alli, of course. Dele Alli.
17. Dele for five. You know, the small signings, players who he could mould and work with, who were willing to be transformed by the manager, were the ones that worked. The ones that spent that where the big money was spent, in the main, didn't work out. Pretty much any of them. No. So, you know, I still don't quite understand what the, going back to others, but the Hill Lamella swap a few years ago, what on earth was that all about? We give away a better player than the one we get back, and we pay them for the privilege. I don't really understand that, but there you go. So everyone makes mistakes, as we know. But again, I don't have a problem with spending 30, 40 million pounds if it's the right sort of player, rather than spending 70 to say, look at the size of my transfer fee. It's about whether the players fit what you're trying to do.
You know, it's interesting when you look at that, Martin, that piece, and you compare it to this summer, whether it's the due diligence or the way in which they've got those profiles right. You know, Ange said it, there's been a clear alignment, really. And, you know, I think, again, what is quite funny is that, and ironic is, you know, Ange this summer, really, there wasn't much of a transfer team or an actual team behind that window. It was very much Ange speaking to those players, seeing if they're the right fit. You know, we heard about the call he had to Maddison where he said, look, whether you come or not, it's going to be a different Tottenham that I'm building. The Cory that we've heard has said he'd walk over broken glass to come and sign for Spurs. Solomon, as you said, was doing fairly well up until that injury where he got a couple of assists, of course, in that Burnley game. And it just feels like all the signings made under him so far, they seem to have really made an impact, a direct impact on the football club. Now, what's been interesting, obviously, is that in the last few months, we've not had the pleasure of having you on since then. Spurs have made a couple of or three or four real key internal appointments. We've seen Scott Mumm come on board as a new club CEO. Obviously, we've had this new data-led recruitment team with technical director Johan Langer, also appointed along with chief scout Rob McKenzie and head of football insights and strategy Frederick Leaf, along with confirmation that Paratici is still in the background, as the kids would say, still cooking. I'm intrigued to know from you, Martin, this new team we've got in place, there seems to be a really good dynamic there. And just, again, as I re-emphasise, made that word and been clear, there's a real alignment. That's really important, right, in terms of not just this window, but future windows, in terms of getting players in right. And as you have touched upon, the right profiles at the right time, getting these guys through the door.
It's about identification of what exactly you want, sorting out the players that fit that bill, and then clarity about how you're going to go to it. Now, for Tottenham to sign two players by the 12th day of the window was remarkable, wasn't it? You know, in January, where we're used to lastminute.com as the way of being, and suddenly you're getting two who are both able to play in the first league game of the year. That's really good. You know, I think that's exactly what you want. And, you know, Werner is a punt to nothing. If it works out, brilliant. You're buying for 15 million. If it doesn't work out, thanks very much. See you. It's been fun knowing you. Dragosin is obviously a longer term thing. We've all heard his agent claim he's going to play for Real Madrid and Barcelona. Well, good luck, actually. Because if he's that good that Real Madrid and Barcelona are going to spend 80 million on him, then it's well, worked right? Everyone, hasn't it? We're not going to have a problem with it.
No, so absolutely.
Let's enjoy that. But it needs to be long-term. There's short-term target. There's long-term target. There's strategic thinking. You know, they've gone and got this Croatian boy who's going to come in 18 months' time. So there's that. There's also picking up, you know, Ashley Phillips from Blackburn, who's now obviously on loan at Plymouth. But someone they really feel can play. It's about making sure there's opportunities for Donnelly and Simsek Bell and Dorrington, and in a year's time maybe Mikey Moore, etc., and you know, the Spanish winger, if they're good enough. Lancashire is another one. If they're good enough, opportunities for them to have a chance of proving themselves in the first team frame. And I think all of this has to be together. It can't just be one bit of it.
Yeah,
the whole package has got to be right. But it also means that the manager has to have faith in the people above him, and Daniel has to have faith in the people below him. So everything has to be aligned, because if it isn't aligned, then you're going to get noises off and whispers, and you get the manager saying things to make it clear that he's not happy. And I'm not saying that's going to happen, but we've seen what happens when that does happen. We've seen the issues it causes, the splits, the fissures within the club. And in, as I said, we saw last March, the absolute implosion of the club because the manager decided to try and take a nuclear bomb to his own players. I mean, I don't think that's ever going to happen under this manager, but you never know in future managers. What is important is strategy, planning, execution across whole of the upper tier of the club.
Yeah. You know what? You say it there, Martin. You know, when I think back to that Conte, that post-match, the press conference. Look, I know many felt there was some home truths being told there, but I don't think I've ever quite seen a torching of your job instantly on the spot. I mean,
Benitez did one when he was at Chelsea up at Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
And he basically turned on the fans after they won 1-0. And it was in 2013. He'd fallen out with everyone, it seemed. And he still went on to win the Europa League that year, so he didn't do that bad.
These clubs still get a trophy. We don't. I mean, I think the hardest thing for me last season, when I think back, is just the AC Milan tie in the Champions League. I mean, there we are, 0-0 in the second leg, having to score.
Not even trying until the last 5 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I just, you know, some of the games, you just think, can I get those 94 minutes back of my life?
Yeah. I don't mind losing.
No.
As long as you try to win.
Absolutely.
What I don't like is losing when you try to draw. Or you try not to lose.
Yeah.
So if on Friday, for example, they have a right go at it and get beat 4-3 in a brilliant game, or get beat 4-1 in a brilliant game, at least you know they've tried to win. They what you won't do is they folded. That's the difference. They go out there and they don't say, the manager doesn't say, right, first 45 minutes, don't do anything. Just don't, we'll beat them in the second half. Don't. No, he says, let's go out and try and win the game.
Let's try and win.
Doesn't mean we will win, but let's try and win. Let's try and score goals. That's what we're there for. We're Tottenham Hotspur. We're supposed to score goals. Go out and play football, because these people have come to see you play. They've not come to see me. They come to see you go out there and play football and entertain them. And if you try and if you entertain and you do your best and you don't win, I will defend you absolutely. And even if you don't try, I'll defend you. But I might not pick you next time. That's to you. No, I like that. I like that approach.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think even back to last season where I kept kidding myself saying, we're conserving our energy. I mean, that's what we're being told before the World Cup. We're conserving our energy. We're 3/4 of the season in. We're still conserving our energy. I just couldn't believe what even I was thinking or saying or talking at the time.
You kid yourself that you believe it. But in fact, nonsense. It was absolutely garbage. And
I believe you have to, don't you?
Look, I still thought, I remember last Christmas, I thought, came back from the World Cup and I thought, right, well, they'll start playing second half of the season.
They've
still got the best striker in the league.
Yep.
Son will turn up. The manager's quite smart. He proved that last year. And we'll finish third. And then it all went to...
He left us in third, didn't he? That was the crazy thing. I mean, he did leave us in third. I mean, again, that's what I've got to ask you, Martin. You know, when you look at the change of, you know, having someone that comes in, like you said there, there isn't an excuse culture. It is a case that we're going to try, we're going to play our way. We are not going to change our style for anybody, regardless of injuries, regardless of suspensions, regardless if I can't put out what I consider to be my best 11. How refreshing is that, Martin? You've watched a lot of Spurs in your time. You wrote a book on this magnificent football club. How refreshing is it now to go into every game believing we can win it? And I'll tell you what, I look at United away, City away. When you come away from those games disappointed, you haven't walked off with 3 points, God, that says you want to something special, right?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I think we were pretty lucky at City because they could have battered us.
That could have done.
But in the end, they deserved the point. And United, no, look, if any one of Son, Maddison or Kulusevski on the pitch, Spurs win. And if all three on the pitch, Spurs win by 4, because that was the difference. I mean, they were just the better team. And they moved the ball really well. And it was just, they did what they lacked was that little bit of clinical edge at the end and a bit of tiredness. You know, Werner's first game in a couple of months. Etc. It happens. We didn't have any. Johnson didn't play that well. I think there's a player there, and I think actually spending a bit less time on the pitch will make him a better player. I think he'll learn from watching and seeing, and then coming on with 20 minutes, 25 minutes to go against tired limbs, because he's explosively quick and he has created a few goals this season. He's not been useless. Yeah. No. He just hasn't quite lived up to maybe hope and expectation. But that's because it could take a while. We can go back to lots of really great players who took a while. Chris Waddle took 6 months to kick a ball for Spurs. He didn't turn out too bad. So I'm not going to be, you know, too negative on Johnson. But the important thing is they're going out and trying to play. And they're trying to win. There were a couple of games they were poor. They were very poor at Wolves.
Yeah.
They were pretty poor against Burnley in the Cup the other week. And they found a way. And that was a great hit from Porro.
Yeah.
But then you see what they did at Old Trafford. Given at least 5 of his first choice team weren't on the pitch, you think, watch how the team with 5 missing could go and do it. Now, I think to be fair, Liverpool would have a go and try and play like that. They're without Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, and they're going to be without Salah now. So they would, and City would, because they're City. I'm not sure anybody else. I don't even think... Well, Arsenal play more control now. They don't really play with that freedom. They are a very, you know, rigid team, I think, Arsenal. So, but there are only 3 teams I can think of that would even imagine going and play like that. And Tottenham is now one of them. And that's the most refreshing thing, that he wants to give the fans a reason to smile.
Yeah. You know, it is a joy when you now go to games and you actually have that belief that we're going to put on a performance. We're actually going to try and win the game. And I think, again, when you reflect on the last 4 or 5 years and just what we've had to go through and endure as Spurs fans. And I know, look, again, there's a lot of fans that watch this show from all different, 92 league clubs that must think, well, hold on, it's not been all terrible, but it has been difficult at times. It has been pretty poor on the eye. And I think, again, the feeling is that, you know, when you get that fire back, Martin, thinking, They've got me again. They've got me sucking again.
They do it every year. You can't stop yourself. You're always going to have that.
This year
will be better. The difference is this year it is better.
Yes.
And when you say next year will be better, it's because it will be even better than this year. You just sense it. Things are going in the right direction. And that's leadership, and that's a sense of purpose that we haven't had for quite some time. And I think that's really, really buoyant and vibrant, and it's exciting and it's fun. Mm. And that's it. It's fun. You know, people turning up, walking into the ground thinking this is going to be good. It's not like, oh God, what's going to happen? It's, well, whatever happens, this is going to be good. And that change in itself makes a huge difference.
Hi everyone, Crackers here with your 2024 Legends event update. Thursday the 7th of March at Tilswood Golf Club in Surrey, echo61.co.uk have England legend Stuart Pearce. Friday the 8th and Saturday the 9th of March, Sandro is appearing in Limavady and Dublin respectively. That's Emerald Spurs events across the socials for tickets. Worcester Spurs at Worcestershire County Cricket Club. They have Harry Redknapp on Thursday the 14th of March. Friday the 15th of March at Dartford FC, South East Thames Spurs have Paul Stewart and Paul Walsh. H2O Legend Events.co.uk for tickets there. Monday the 18th of March, sportingexperiences.co.uk have Glenn Hoddle at the Wylots Theatre, Potters Bar, Hertfordshire. And finally, Friday the 22nd of March, closeencounter.events have Harry Redknapp at the Penridge Suites, Arnos Grove, North London. So there's your update at Mr. Cracknell across the socials for further info. Cheers.
We spoke about Ange on the pitch in terms of what he's been doing. I want to ask you about him off the pitch just a little bit in terms of the press conferences, both pre and post-match, because I've been saying this to a lot of, you know, wonderful journalists like yourself, that there's a certain character there that doesn't like being questioned too much, doesn't want to give too much away in terms of injury news, team news in the build-up to games. As we saw, obviously, a few weeks ago, in terms of the integrity around Eric Dyer being let go a day before that he was, and almost the fact is, look, if I tell you something, don't question it, because I've told you that and you don't need to question it. And it's interesting because, again, I feel as a character, you know, us Spurs fans, we absolutely are adoring the man. But I think from a piece of a, you know, from a journalist going to the pressers, you know, you've got to be on your toes, haven't you? He's going to be very much kind of ready for anything that you're going to throw at him. And he'll have a joke with you, but it seems to be on his terms, Martin. Is that fair for me to say?
I think from what I gather, talking to people who've been there a lot, that seems to be the way. It is on his. The thing that strikes me as really odd is how nervous he is around the camera. When he does the post-match interviews, he looks into the ground, just looks at his feet.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to look at the camera. And I don't quite, and it's strange that, because you will see him when he sat on the sort of stage for a press conference, he's looking out and telling everyone. And so there's still a little bit of it that nervousness. I mean, I spoke to John Greekin, who wrote the book about him, who's a colleague of mine from years ago when I was on the Mail with him 25 years ago. And he was telling me when he came in that this is the real deal, this bloke. And this, you know, you'll fight seeing patterns of play, but you're also seeing the way he gets his players. And in truth, how he deals with the media only matters when things aren't going well on the pitch. Because when things are going well on the pitch, it doesn't matter what he says to the media. It's the football that counts. And what really matters is how he deals with the 25 men who he has in his squad, but also everyone else around the squad. And that could include the cook, you know, the chef in the training room, the kids who are doing the boots, whatever it might be. Everyone, even the bloke on the gate, if everyone feels that they're part of it, it rubs off around the whole unit. And that's what we're getting. Clearly, that the players really do feel they are part. Now, there'll come a point when a couple of players will feel less happy, because that's football and human nature. And, you know, someone who's happy to be on the bench for 6 months won't be after 18 months. That's just what is. But I do think that what you see with him is a fierce determination. Now, that's bred from being, you know, this boy from, you know, Greek background, immigrant father to Melbourne, playing for a Greek football team, because it was, I think, you know, South Melbourne were Melbourne Hellas. They were the Greek team before that. So he played for and he'd come from there, from a local team, to the biggest league in the world, one of the biggest clubs in the world, having had success and had to prove himself. And as he recalls, you know, being ignored by the likes of Huddersfield and other clubs who just weren't interested in him because he was an Aussie who'd been in Japan and Australia and then went to Celtic. He couldn't get a job. And now there isn't a job he couldn't get. And that's the reality of it almost, isn't it? It can change very quickly.
Yeah. His journey has been incredible. I mean, I have to remind myself, Martin, sometimes that this is his first job in the Premier League, or just, you know, again, he's been around British football with Celtic, but the way he's got such a confidence in his own belief of the way he wants to play, he won't divulge, he won't change, he will not stand for any notion of having to adapt. But what I find quite interesting is that whilst we're saying that, there has been times mid-game that there has been a slight tweak, a slight adaption, because he needed to do that. But yeah. Again, I think the manager has shown he's willing. You know, flexible, right? Very flexible.
Sending on Højbjerg to give a bit of control is not a bad thing. You know, no. Sometimes you take the heat out of the game. Yeah. A little bit of that. Other times, you know, change the positions, change the players, change the shape slightly. That's all part of it. The ethos doesn't change. The detail might. That's how it should be. I think we may see next season, assuming that things go as well as we hope they're going to go, that he has to be a bit different. When he went into Europe with Celtic, he did try and play exactly the same way.
Yeah.
And they got picked off. The difference might be that he's got better players at Tottenham playing that way. In fact, clearly he's got better players. And so he may be able to get away with playing like that. And to be fair, you've got to argue that Guardiola hasn't really changed the way he plays.
No.
Ancelotti never changes the way he plays. He plays a certain way. You stick to it. Mourinho doesn't change the way he plays. You know, certain managers stick to their principles. They've been successful. Why shouldn't this manager be successful if all the players buy into what he's trying to do? But there will be moments when it doesn't work, because we saw that, you know. I mean, the Chelsea game was madness, but brilliant madness. And I get the argument, you know, if we do what we're supposed to do here, which is just sit back in a 4 and a 3 and one up, we'll lose anyhow. So if we're going to lose anyhow, let's do something that they can't expect, which is what he did. And if either of those chances go in to make it 2-2 in the last minute in extra time, then Chelsea probably would have just blown their heads off. They would have, because they couldn't get their heads around. It took them 40 minutes to work out how to score in the first place, you know, against
It's very true.
And they couldn't get it right at all. And it's a bit of luck, of course, but it worked, because it was like, he can't be doing this. No one does this. And they were doing it, and they had chances. They created chances against 11 with 9 because they were still in the game. And that's, you know, and it was in the end, 4-1 was about the right result. But it wasn't a million miles away from being 2-2, was it?
No, it wasn't. And again, I think when you look at certain games this season, and what's quite interesting is you kind of leave me that period, Martin, where he has had to go through a little bit of a period of adversity. We had the 3 defeats on the spin. And, you know, on the back of what was such a good start, you know, I maintain the fact, Martin, I don't know if you agree, that had Spurs kept all their players fit, I honestly genuinely believe we'd be right up there, if not top, a couple of points off it. I genuinely believe that, because you look at the way we started, and I think the most exciting thing for me at the moment is that I don't think we're yet to see a full 90-minute performance of genuine Ange ball. I think we've seen it in periods. I think we've seen a good 45 minutes, a good hour or so against Newcastle. We're yet to see, for me, a real 90-minute performance. And the exciting thing is that we've been cut points down, of course, cut the goals down to the likes of Arsenal. We've come back. United, we've come back. City, we've come back. And I think that's the really exciting thing, that when this team do go a goal down, the heads don't drop like they've done previously. They don't capitulate. There's a genuine...
They still think they can get back in it.
Absolutely.
And and if you look at the games that were lost, Wolves,
Villa,
if the Chelsea game, look, if Son scores that second goal, which is offside, and it was offside, if Romero doesn't lose his head, if Maddison stays on the pitch, all of those things, Spurs win that game 5-0.
Yeah, I believe it.
They were absolutely murdering them.
Yeah,
but even with that. Without the madness of all the injuries and suspensions, they'd have got at least a point at Wolves. They'd have beaten Villa, beaten West Ham. Well, that's 7 more points.
Yeah.
Now, they might have lost at City, because anyone could lose at City. But even then, they'd have been, you know, they're not fifth, they're second or third. And That's reality. Now, we don't know that, but you know, you look at it, you see what they've done since. So now you've got 17 games left with pretty much a full squad for most of them, for hopefully all of them, apart from you'd miss some for a couple more games. You can see Spurs doing winning 12 or 13 of those with the players they've got.
Agreed.
And if they do that, if they win 12 or 13 of them, that's Champions League football get pretty much guaranteed. Because that's, you know, that's 79 points, and it's normally 73 gets your Champions League football. And who knows, in a season in which people are dropping points, they're not a million miles away. Now, I don't think there's enough to win. I think City will get to 86, 7 points and win the league.
Yeah.
And Liverpool will come second, I suspect. But it's good enough to be what surpasses any realistic expectation, I think, for this season.
I do agree. I mean, again, going into the start of the season, again, what we've discussed and going through what we had done, I think many would have been maybe optimistically thinking top six, but top four. I mean, given what we went into the season with, I think many would have been delighted. Look, I'm really selfish. I really want the FA Cup. We are going to come on, Mike. I've got to ask you about that FA Cup tie. It's a huge one for Spurs. We're building up to it here. We are really, really excited. It's a massive, massive game for the football club. For a lot of those players as well, obviously, Madders says that the point of coming in, wanted to win a trophy, wants to win trophies with Tottenham. You know, interesting, again, player-wise at the moment where we stand in the market, we've seen some links for Emerson Royale potentially looking, well, I say that there was a bid that was launched by El Nassr for the player. Spurs, we understand, turned that down. It was around the 20 million mark. We're under understanding that the Saudi side have now turned their attention to Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I'm just interested to know from you, Martin, on Emerson Royale, given the fact that guy has had to play pretty much across the whole of the back line, I mean, left back, centre back, right back, I mean, so adaptable for Ange, a player that's had to face staunch criticism. And many people would say rightly so, he wasn't up to the scratch, you know, season before last. And the way that guy has come back, though, and for me, you know, we've seen some, putting this politely, we've seen some awful defenders at Spurs in the last however many years I can think of. He's by no far some of the worst we've seen. But how would you feel, Martin, if an offer came in that was really difficult to turn down, would you let him go when you consider the fact that we haven't really got a natural backup for Porro? And also the fact is that this is a guy that can play across the back four like he's done pretty much all season. And he started 6 of the last 10 games. So he's been fairly reliable and useful for Ange. He's a player that he's relied upon. And from what I understand, really happy to stay. Ange loves him because, again, he's that team player that obviously Ange loves.
I wouldn't want him to go now in January. I mean, maybe in the summer when you can get others in, but not now. Mm. Yeah. I've always felt with Emerson that he's a pretty good defender. He just should never cross the halfway line because his distribution isn't great. Although I know he's got a couple of goals and let's be honest, he isn't the best with the ball at his feet, but he's not a bad defender. And there are games he's played extremely well because of his physicality. He's got enough speed. So you've got to find someone who's better than him. I mean, if you look at the way they want to play, you want another fullback who wants to invert and is good on the ball, who can clone Porro in the same way we need a left back to clone Udogie.
Yes, so that when one of them
is missing, because people get injured, they get suspended, whatever.
Yeah.
You've got a natural replacement. Now, we haven't got a natural replacement for either of those. You know, Ben Davies, if he has to, when he gets back fit again, can pop in there, but he's not the same. He's done really well this season, by the way, but he's not the same player. And Emerson can, if needed, play at right back, but he isn't the same as Power. Doesn't give you the same ability on the ball, doesn't give you the same flexibility and mobility off the ball because they're different players. So that's what, longer term for the summer, you do need replacement or options for both of those to be the sort of the shadow fullbacks. And then what do you do with Emerson? It depends on whether you get another couple of centre halves in, doesn't it? You know, Dyer's gone and he's not going to come back. He won't play again. Tanganga isn't good enough, etc. You need 5, I think, centre halves. Now, it may be that they decide that either Phillips or Dorrington can be the 4th or 5th. And if that is the case, and or they get one more in, then maybe Emerson looks surplus to requirements in the summer, but certainly not now, because you're not going to make wholesale recruitment changes in January, not when you've got 8 days till the window shuts.
Yeah, again, I think you pick up on it there very, very key, is that in 8 days, can you really guarantee you're going to find someone better than Emerson Royale that's going to come in and do the job that he has done? And again, buy into that team ethos. That's what I love about Emerson. You know, he said it in an interview recently that he'll do anything for the team. And again, that is what Ange absolutely loves, as a player that is willing to put his body on the line, fight for the team, and not just feel you're going to start every week. And I think that has been one of the key factors in why he's so loved around the camp. He also has got really good close relationships with the Brazilian lads and a lot of the South American guys. And I don't think you can also undermine that case. It's really important that you have a dressing room which is united and everyone sings from the same hymn sheet. And again, many will laugh at the fact, again, listen, it's not all about ability. It should be. It's not all about ability. You have to have the right characters that make up a dressing room. And there's no doubt that he's very well liked in that dressing room. So it will be interesting what happens in these next few days. But as we understand, it looks like for the moment, Al Nassr's intentions have turned elsewhere and they're looking at Wan-Bissaka. From one Brazilian to another, Martin, Rishi, Richarlison, you spoke about him earlier. Guy's kind of got 6 in 6. You know, we heard reports all around March time, I think now. I say March? No, I'm telling a lie. October time? August time, September time, Saudi interest in the player. You know, as you said earlier, had he had that operation earlier, we're not quite sure how many goals he would have been on, but it is 6 in the last 6. He certainly looks like a player reborn under Ange, and to be fair, Ange's confidence in him has never wavered. He has given him regular game time whenever he could and has done. I'm intrigued to know whether you feel he's got a genuine long-term future at Spurs, or whether he'll be one of those players that, again, will be looked at in the summer to see what's the best for the player? What's the best for the football club?
I think if he keeps on scoring at this rate, you don't have any option, do you? You've got to keep him. I mean, it's as simple as that. And I think he's looking like the player the club thought they signed. And we didn't have that player for 18 months.
Yep.
For whatever reason. Clearly, there were issues. He's not even trying to hide the fact that he has significant problems coming to terms with things, that he had some mental health issues. He had injury issues. And we forget sometimes they're human beings. If their body's not right, their head might not be right, and vice versa. It's really tough that sometimes you have to find a solution within yourself and get help to find that solution. Now, he appears to have found that solution. I thought his effort at Old Trafford, winning the ball back high up the pitch, was absolutely brilliant and was a key factor in the way Spurs were able to play, because their central defenders couldn't rest because he was forcing them to give the ball away. Now, he wasn't doing that often in the past, I didn't think. Whereas there was a prime example that a player is suddenly more confident. He scored his goal. He's looking for opportunities. He didn't get another chance, but he was a constant pain in the backside. Mm. And it led to things happening because he was making them happen. And that's what you're looking for, players who make things happen. And I was really impressed with his performance, very pleased with it. I thought that was really what I wanted to see. And he started to score goals. He's even scoring his goals with his feet now, which is a good sign. He's always been quite good with his head. He's missed a few chances, but he keeps on coming back for more. And he when he misses one, you can see how much it hurts him. It's genuine. That's like, oh, I've let everyone down. But in the past, when he's missed one, he's gone missing for 15 minutes.
He has done, yes.
It's not the case now. He's thinking, well, that's my miss. I'm going to score the next one. And, you know, there's been a few examples. He missed a couple against Burnley, but he kept going. But Newcastle, he missed one early, but kept on going, got two. And you think, this is what you want, though. A player who's nicking goals. He got that, you know, the goal at Forest, really important goals. If you start scoring important goals, it changes the way you feel about yourself, doesn't it? And I think, whilst you may look again in the summer if something really impressive comes on the market, I don't think he's one. Whereas I was thinking in January they'd probably let him go, the way things were going. That if the Saudis came in with a bid, he'd go. I'm not sure that's the case anymore.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, his best return in a Premier League season, I believe, is 15 with Everton. Yeah. You think he'll match that or beat that this season?
We're up to, was he 7 now?
7. Yeah.
Yeah. 7 halfway through. If he stays fit with the run of games, he could certainly get to 14, 15, couldn't he? You wouldn't rule it out, particularly if Spurs keep playing. They're going to create chances against anyone. Then he's got more chances of scoring, obviously. And, you know, and he's not the only one. That's the thing. He's not the only threat that they have to worry about, because you've got Son when he comes back. you've got Kulusevski, you've got Maddison creating, you've got Udogie getting forward and Poyo getting forward, and you've got Werner potentially scoring a couple, let's see. And Johnson maybe starting to find it. So it isn't just all on his shoulders. That helps enormously as well.
It does. No, it really, really does. And look, again, we'll keep our fingers crossed for Richie, because he's in that impeccable vein of form, as you say there, Martin. Six in the last six, going really, really well. You know, we touched on Werner earlier, and as you said, it was a really much a low-risk deal. And if it doesn't work out, we send him back, and such as such. I mean, Spurs have got a decent fee in there as a buy option. They want to obviously activate that $15.5 million. Have to ask you about the centre-back Spurs pipped off Bayern Munich. I mean, it won't be often I say that to you, Martin, on Last Word on Spurs. Give me your thoughts around that move itself, because, look, as a player, obviously, Ange seemed to identify very, very early. One, of course, that, again, he picked up the phone to, obviously, again, makes the point that he doesn't force any player to be here. He sells them what he believes to be the vision, and ultimately, it's down to the player. Now, we understand at Bayern Munich, he probably wouldn't have played first-team football anyway, and again, at Spurs, he's got a real battle on his hands, but I feel like the signing of Radu Dragosin, what it does do is bring real, genuine competition to an era which we haven't really had that in recent years. And what I'm really hoping is that this will bring Romero's discipline right down to a new degree now, because the worry, I think, for any of those defenders is that if you are not performing, this guy could come in and he may very well take your place. So what do you make of it for you in terms of the player profile we've got here?
Yeah, again, it's another young player with something to prove. His numbers look really good. He played in two very different teams at Genoa. The one that came up played possession, dominated the ball. The one that then was up played more of a counter-attack. So he had to learn to defend a bit more, which was positive. Now, we're going to be a team that has more of the ball than not, but there'll be games. You know, you can't have dominate. You're not going to dominate possession at Liverpool or against City too often. You can have your bits, but you're going to have to do your hard yards as well. So I thought when he came on at United, he looked quite composed on the ball. You could see that. And he gave the ball away. They weren't all, you know, incredible passes, but they were secure passes. They were hit with conviction as well. He wasn't just touching it. He was getting through the ball, which is good. And yeah, I mean, I thought actually Romero was probably his best performance in a Spurs shirt at Old Trafford, actually. Didn't put a foot wrong. It was terrific. And he started thinking, oh, crikey, I'm not a shoo-in here. I've got to behave myself. I've got to keep control. Look, we know that he's going to get sent off at least once more this season because it's Romero. And that could potentially be a five-game ban. So you've got to be aware of the danger for that. A four-game ban, actually. But yeah. Nevertheless, I think it looks like another signing that makes a big difference to the overall strength of the squad. And I think that's actually really important, that when players come in, whether they're starters or not, that you sense the squad has strengthened.
Yeah.
And that's definitely the case with him. And he'll have 2 or 3 years to make a case for himself. And there'll be games when Romero or Van de Ven are not there. And if he comes in and plays well, they won't get back in because he'll be selected on merit.
Yeah. Again, I think it's really, really exciting. I think, again, when you look at the signing Spurs have made, they just seem very logical, very well thought out of. And look, again, that one there with regards to Dragosin does have, hopefully, a really, really positive future.
Phoenix 51 is a powerful employee technology enabling organisations to make data-driven decisions at every stage of the employee journey, from hiring through benchmarking and development too. The platform provides detailed analytics on the most important asset in your business, your people, enabling organisations not only to make the correct hiring decisions, but also how to benchmark, train and retain them. Phoenix 51, powering your people decisions through every part of the employee journey.
Hi there, this is Russ Williams from The Last Word on Spurs. A few years ago, I researched and wrote a book about the huge physical and mental benefits of one simple form of exercise. It's called How to Walk Yourself Healthy and Happy, and it's helped thousands of people all over the world. Now, I've created an audio course which helps people maybe like you prevent 5 serious life-threatening conditions and protect themselves for the future. For example, this form of exercise is the closest thing to a silver bullet for conditions like high blood pressure and high cholesterol levels. If you're over 40, this is the information you need and the simple plan to protect yourself and get results. Risk-free, visit walkyourselfhealthyandhappy.com/audio-course or click the website link in my profile on X.
When we're looking in terms of, again, targets that have coming around the window, I think we touched upon this with you, Martin, in the summer. Conor Gallagher, Chelsea, right? There's obviously the situation around the PSR, and we know about the fact Chelsea do need to really sell, if not one, a couple of their homegrown talents. You touched upon it earlier. Given the fact that I think there's no smoke without fire, I mean, there's no way Spurs are interested in Gallagher if there hasn't been some intimate there interest given to Spurs that to bid for the player. So I'm really intrigued to know from you, Conor Gallagher, do you see him fitting in an Ange Postecoglou side? And do you think this may be one for the summer rather than now? Because surely Chelsea fans and Maurizio Pochettino would be up in his arms at the thought of that. They're going to let go one of their key players that has essentially taken on the captaincy following Reece James' injury. And he's been in and around that first team pretty much every single game. I mean, what's your thoughts on the overall potential move for Gallagher?
Look, clearly there's been interest for some time. Equally, Chelsea have to sell their homegrown players because of the way they're spending money. I think it's unlikely that it will be done in the next week or so, but only because that's a very narrow window for it. However, if Chelsea identify a player that they really need or really want, which would be a striker, and the only way to get that striker in terms of making the money, the numbers add up, is to sell Gallagher, then it isn't inconceivable in the next week. More likely is in the summer. I think that within the next 18 months, both Gallagher and James would have been sold by Chelsea.
Wow.
But James would end up going to Man City as the replacement for Walker, I think.
Wow, what a cool. Interesting. Okay.
Because what with James is because the new owners have never seen him play well.
Mm.
And if they can get 80 million for him, they will. Because they need to get the money in. And they want superstar £100 million players. They want to be able to show off their shiny new toy and show Casado and Lavia and Enzo and what. There's no place for Gallagher in that team because he's not a shiny new toy. He's the one they found in the back of the cupboard. And so, therefore, they don't value him. I think if he wants to play, he's a Chelsea boy, he wants to play for Chelsea.
When he went
to Palace, it was all about proving he was good enough to play for Chelsea. He did really well. If he is given the boot by Chelsea, which is what it will be, can you imagine just how desperate he'll be to prove them wrong in the right way?
Absolutely.
How better could he do it than by playing for the one club that the Chelsea fans really don't like? So I think there's definitely real interest, and he would give you legs. He's an all-action player. So I remember the England game at the start of the season against Italy in the Euro qualifier, and England were running out of legs. They were struggling. They were 2-1 up, and then Gallagher came on for the last 15 minutes, and he completely changed the match with his sheer intensity and energy. He suddenly forced Italy, who was stroking about and probing, to hurry their passes, and they stopped threatening because he wasn't giving the time on the ball. Now, a midfielder who can do that and can also get forward gives you options. You know, if Sal's not quite right, or then you've got an option there. Gallagher can be Sal in a way that maybe the others can't. It's about having those options to cover and to give you something. And also, there's still the need for homegrown players. Now, there was a situation, a likelihood, that the European court would change the rules on homegrown players. So they'd have to be club-trained rather than association-trained. But that hasn't happened at the moment. So you need to have 8 association-trained players. Now, Spurs are going to be lucky, I think, because all the young kids coming through. But at the moment, they don't count because they're under 21. So over 21s, you need 8. If you haven't got 8, then you have fewer players in your squad. So Gallagher would immediately help on the homegrown player quota as well, which, while that isn't a major reason for doing it, it gives extra heft to the thought about doing it.
Yeah, you know, again, it's one that, for me, I'll be honest, I haven't seen enough of the player really personally to give a real verdict on it. But again, it's one of those where so far with Ange's recruitment strategy and the ball and the hierarchy as well that have been in place there, that look, if that's a player they desperately want, obviously I want to back the manager. I want to give him what he wants. I mean, what's been clear is, as you said there, Martin, this hasn't been a target for one window. They've liked him in the summer as well. And it's genuine long-term interest, which makes you feel he is a player that Ange really does want. But again, it is one we'll see and keep an eye on. Really intrigued to know in terms of the outgoings, your feeling around potentially Højbjerg leaving the club. I mean, I keep making this reference that he is the first off the dance floor, isn't he, at the end of the game. He can't wait to get off the pitch. And I feel, again, there's no doubt in what that guy's given to the club. He's worked hard under a number of different managers. I think he has been more of the makeup of a Mourinho, of a Conte-type player they're looking for. I just feel under Ange, the way Spurs want to play, I just don't feel he's the right particular fit for the systems that Spurs want. And I feel, look, if he goes overseas, La Liga, Serie A, I feel that he's much more adapted and suited to that style of play. Do you feel if the right offer comes in this window, Spurs have to look at it?
Not unless you can fill the void with somebody else.
Right,
so
okay.
If you get Gallagher, you can let him go.
So your verdict would be you would not be letting Højbjerg go unless there's a direct replacement coming in.
Remember, we've still got Bentancur is just coming back from injury.
Yep.
Sars away. Lo Celso is frequently injured. Madison's coming back from injury. Skip, game. I thought he played well at United, but he's not someone you think is going to take the game by the scruff of the neck. So Bissouma away at the moment. He'll be away potentially for another couple of weeks. And he has these, you know, he seems to be somewhat indisciplined at times. Started the season really well, but that's not been the case recently. So you really do run the risk of being a bit light in the middle of the park if you let Højbjerg go. And I think what's important is to make sure you have the numbers and bodies you need to get to the end of the season. And then you say to him, look, you've been brilliant. You've had 4 years. You go with our blessing as long as they meet the fee, and we're not going to be silly about the fee. But if they meet what we want for you, you're more than happy. We'll listen to that. If they come close to what we want for you, we'll listen to that, and wish you have a great success in the rest of your career. And that's fine. Whether he goes or stays, I think he's done really well.
Absolutely, yeah.
And there are games when he's been really, really important for us over the last few years. So let's not be too down on him. Yes, he isn't perhaps the identical player for Postecoglou football, but he's doing his absolute best. And in games he's come on, he's been pretty effective most of the time. There are times when you think he can't actually pass the ball 3 yards. And yet other times when he runs with the ball and he picks it up. And, you know, the goal he scored in Marseille last season was a fantastic goal.
Absolutely wonderful goal.
He's not a bad player. He's a good football player. He may not be quite what we would want him to be, but he's the best he can be, and he does all right. And I wouldn't just dismiss him and get rid now for the sake of it, unless you're getting someone in who you think is evidently better.
You know, I just think with him, it's really bizarre that he's been better coming off the bench than starting this season, isn't he? It seems to have worked a lot better like that. And, you know, again, one, as I said before, if the right offer comes in, the only thing I would say is that doesn't seem to be a huge amount of money, Martin, in around Europe at the moment, is there? I mean, really, for what Spurs are looking for. And I know they've got him at a pretty much a cut price deal because we saw Kyle Walker-Peters head on to Southampton as part of the deal at the time. Again, I'm not sure whether what Spurs are asking for is going to really maybe stop any potential deal this window. And I think when you look at some of the other players that, again, we've let go and are on the periphery at the moment, just got to get your thoughts on Brian Hill and Ryan Sessegnon. You know, Brian Hill, for as much as I watch him, God loves a trier. They really, really do. But you said it earlier.
He's never going to be a Tottenham Hotspur player.
I don't think so.
It's not, you know, it's not his fault. He's not physically enough. He's not strong enough. He's a nice little player, but he's never going to be good enough for what Tottenham want.
Mm.
And it's a shame. And, you know, it doesn't work. It don't all work.
I mean, the whole loan thing around, this is what I find bizarre about Brian here. He goes on loan, there's no option to buy, but we just keep doing it. We keep doing it. It's like, this is insanity. It's crazy, right?
You know, I'm sorry. Just get rid and say, thanks. It's been great. Not quite work. Good luck. Move on. Right, who's next? That's, you've got to be willing to take these hard decisions. I don't see any point in keeping players who you know have got no future at the club. Heath one of them, Tanganga's another, Sessegnon's another.
Right.
I would have said that about Lo Celso, but actually I've been quite impressed with him when he's played this season. The problem is it's when he's played.
Can we keep him fit though, Martin? If we're in Europe next season, that's the key. Can we keep him fit for more than once every three, four games? That is the problem.
The other thing is, if you've got seven in midfield, you only need him once every three or four games.
It's true, but I mean, I don't know if we could, can you have a player? Can you have that luxury having a player like that?
Well, I mean, but I think European games, he'd actually be really quite good because he keeps the ball. The games are played at a lower tempo.
Right.
He'd actually be quite useful if we're in Champions League, when we've got eight Champions League group phase games, if we're in it next season, because of the expansion of the competition, the league stage of the Swiss system and all this sort of nonsense. So he'd actually be quite useful in those games. I just wouldn't really fancy him at Liverpool away.
Okay. So he's become a luxury player overnight, right? We're going to keep him as a luxury.
Well, that's, I mean, but there's something in him. We've seen, you know, against Villa, absolutely. When he's been brought in this season, he's actually done quite well.
Yep, he has.
So that's been the case in the way that others haven't been. Yep. Therefore, you can see a value for him.
Yeah, look, I do agree on that. I mean, again, you said it earlier, but Sessegnon, you just feel we've got to cut our losses on him. It's just been a shame. It really bizarre, because obviously when Spurs signed him, as you well know at the time, there were some real high-profile clubs coming in for him, and it felt like a real coup that Spurs got him. Has it just been, again, this so stop-start nature? I mean, will see much of him? No, I agree.
And I feel really sorry for the boy, because clearly there's talent there, and he's proven it. But if you're never, I mean, it's not like Lo Celso, who's had injuries.
Yep.
Sessegnon's never fit.
No.
And, you know, he's got a header last year, didn't he, against Southampton the first day of the season?
Yeah.
How many games did he play? 10, 12? I don't know. Not many.
No.
He never plays. So if you're never available, you've got to put your hands up and say, sorry, it's been a real shame. And you've done your contract and good luck. And as I said, move on. And there's others. Yep. Tanganga, not quite going to be good enough, I'm afraid.
Do you think Spurs have been pretty ruthless though, Martin? You know, we've seen Dyer go, like you say, Tanganga's now gone, obviously, in terms of a loan. Obviously, we've got minutes now going out for, obviously, the likes of Devine and Phillips, what he picked up on. Do you feel in the next week or so, can you see Spurs being pretty ruthless and seeing Hill and Sessegnon go out of the window in the final week?
I certainly can see both of them going, but and it wouldn't be a loss, would it? It would allow you to look at some of the others as well, some of the kids if you need them. I suspect there'll be development loans for a couple of those as well. Yep. I mean, I think that, you know, sending two to Plymouth, Devine in particular, Devine's done well at Port Vale. Right, let's see what he can do the next tier up.
Yep.
Phillips was about, he needs football. We really fancy this boy. He needs to play football. Let's get him out and play football. And against, you know, in a tough league, a very tough league in the Championship. Again, let's just see what he's about. If he can stand up to that, because we're going to need him in the future. We think there's a player there. And there's maybe they might look at one or two of the others and think, forget the Youth Cup for the really kids. Forget winning Premier League 2. It's an irrelevance. We need to work out which of these players are good enough to play for Tottenham Hotspur within the next 18 months. And sometimes you have to find out by throwing them into the hard stuff and seeing if they can cope with it.
Talk about the hard stuff. This game on Friday is pretty much on the hard stuff, isn't it? Man City in the FA Cup. It's mouthwatering. It's exciting. It's games that I think players, Martin, want to be involved in, right? I mean, again, as I said to you earlier, we've gone out of cup ties, which, some of the teams we've gone out to domestically. You know,
City, I was there for the 3-0 up, 4-3 defeat in 2003-04.
I don't know age you were. I think I was 10 in bed listening to that on the radio.
But Jerry Barton got sent off for having a row with the referee at half time.
I know, honestly. Yeah. No, it is nightmares. I mean, I have to ask you, how did you feel when Mabsy pulled out Spurs for Man City? Tell me how you felt, or pulled out the ball for Man City. How did you feel?
Clearly, he's no longer on Daniel's payroll, is he? Because he wouldn't have done that. Look, it's a massive game. Two fantastic teams, hopefully. Mm. The league game was brilliant the other week.
It was,
Spurs will play their strongest team. They might give Dragosin a start, but basically Tottenham will play their first team. City will play most of their first team because Guardiola is desperate to score a goal at the stadium because he hasn't done that yet. Really, really thinks it's a big thing. He can't believe he still hasn't scored a goal in five goes at it. And it will be a great game of football, and it could be 4-3 either way, couldn't it? I thought City against Newcastle the other week was just brilliant. They were fantastic, and they nearly lost though. They were 2-1 down with 10 minutes to go, and they won it. And they're brilliant, and they are. And if they turn up, they can. Well, that's why they're European champions. They are the best team in the world, without question. But they are beating them if you have a good day.
Yeah, I'm just going to ask you.
We'll have a go.
Do they have a weakness, Martin, in your opinion?
No. No, they're brilliant. They have, you know, they've got a fantastic goalkeeper. That if they've got 7 or 8 top defenders, they've got De Bruyne and they've got Bernardo Silva and they've got Foden and they've got Grealish. They're just a fabulous team.
Yeah.
But
they are.
That's the standard we want to be at. If Tottenham are going to be the team that Tottenham want to be, they've got to be able to go and play City and take them on home and away and try and beat them. Not try not to lose, try and beat them. And why not? And if it doesn't work out trying to beat them, well, you learn from that and make it better next time. The place will be, the atmosphere will be great, at least before the game. City will have 60% of the ball because they're just really good. We've got to hurt them when we can. But the key is we just give it a right good lash. Give it a go. Create chances. Don't be silly. Don't lose discipline and shape. Play, but defend better than we did in the first half at their place in the league. We got away with that. But we've got more to offer going forward now as well. So that'll make it. So we've got 2 centre halves back, which we didn't have. We've got Maddison. We haven't got Son, which is a shame because he plays well against them. But we've got players who can hurt them. So that's good. And let's just see how it pans out. And if you're asking me honestly, I'd accept a defeat on Friday for 3 straight wins in the league.
Really?
Yeah. But that's because I want to make sure we're in the Champions League next year, because that means more better players and gives us a but I understand the fans who would actually say, no, I'd rather beat City and win the FA Cup and come sixth, because I get that. I just don't necessarily
agree with it. This might surprise you here. I'd rather beat Man City and lose next 3 in the league. That might sound really bizarre for me to say to you, but
for me, that'd be the wrong way around. But I understand people who say that.
Yeah, for me, this cup is so...
You are playing Chelsea in one of those, so maybe you're on your opinion.
You know what's funny? You know, you say that. For me, this cup is so important to me. And again, growing up, FA Cup has been... I keep saying this. I'm nicknamed after Ricky Villa, right? So there's a real... For me, the FA Cup means so much. I want to see Spurs win a trophy, need a trophy. And I know I answered earlier in the season that there's got to stop this desperation around a trophy. But I just feel this group... You know, I've seen Spurs in the Champions League. I've seen us have some glory nights there. And I get it. Like you said, it attracts the big players. It makes, obviously, the fact that it's easier to attract and, as we say, to get those star players in. The team naturally improves. Everything improves the Champions League. But I just feel with Tottenham, and I don't want to downplay them here or poo-poo them, but I don't feel that necessarily playing in the Europa League would be the worst thing in the world, because I do see that, for me personally, that I feel that's more winnable than the Champions League. And again, I just, you know, that's why for me the FA Cup game is so crucial. I just want to see this team win a trophy. And I'll be honest with you, it's the first time in about 5-6 years we've got a real likeable manager. Wouldn't it be nice to win it under a likeable manager?
Oh, no, it'd be great. It'd be really lovely if they could. Look, there were nobody happier than me if they win the FA Cup, I promise you. I mean, you know, I grew up watching Spurs win trophies. You know, one of the first games I went to see was the League Cup in 1973 against Norwich. You know, I was 6. And that's when you expected Spurs to win things. And obviously, we don't expect them to win anything at the moment. But there's real quality there, and they've got a really good chance. And I think that going forward, they're going to have an even better chance. So I understand the argument about winning the FA Cup. I'd love to win it. But I really think that given the way the financial situation has evolved, being in the Champions League and having that £500 million of income, which allows you to spend £300 million on wages and transfers and still be really nowhere near the limit, alters the dynamic of where they're going to be, where the club's going to be, because others can't spend that money. Newcastle can't spend that money. Newcastle, with all the wealth they've got, are restricted because of their revenue streams are so low.
I just want that Wembley day out, Martin. And I think the thing is that because it's been such a long time that we've gone there and really, really played well, I just feel under Ange that, God, this man's got me that anything's possible. He really, really has.
Well, let's just see. I mean, look, I think what I care about more is how they approach the game.
Absolutely.
Because you can't guarantee result.
No.
But you can, or you should be able to guarantee performance and intensity. And if they play with that, and they lose to the best team in the world, I'm not going to be unhappy. I might be disappointed with the referee or with the decision or with a miss or with the silly goal we concede. But that's part of football. The key is how they approach the game. That's what really matters to me.
If Maddison is 80% fit, would you start him, Martin?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm get insane. Him on the pitch. Yeah. Because if we're going to go... and also, City don't do what Chelsea do or did, which is to kick players up in the air in the same way.
Mm.
Chelsea targeted Maddison from the start of that game.
Yeah.
Did some rotation fouling on him. That's not really... City don't really do that. They tactically foul. They do. Mm. They're very good at that.
Yep.
If you're breaking from your half, they'll take the free kick because they don't think they're going to get booked. That's fine.
Yep.
But they're not a team that will go through the back of players too often. So it's not the sort of game where he's as likely to get injured as it would be against a different team. So, and also the one way to find out whether he's up to it is to give him the chance to see if he's up to it. Is he going to hold up? Not necessarily play the whole 90, but give him 60 minutes and then see where we are.
Yeah. If I ask you for a prediction, how do you feel it's going to end up?
3-2 either way.
Really?
Last minute winner by someone.
Oh, don't. Not another John Macken. Right, final question I've got to ask you, Martin. Can I just say, whenever I get together with you, it's always fascinating. I love getting your views on Spurs. I mean, look, I feel like you've seen it all. Not to age you. In terms of
I am very old.
You have seen a lot of Spurs during your time. That's why I love getting you on here, because I always have a fantastic chat whenever we have the pleasure of bringing you on here. And it's been great to bring you on when things have been looking up. And on the point of looking up, final question I've got to ask you. What do you personally feel would constitute success for Spurs this season under Ange?
Success is top four.
Right.
Ideally, top four and win the FA Cup. Win the FA Cup and finish fifth or sixth would be success. Fifth might be good enough for Champions League place. We'll know more by eighth on that, whether it is or not. The key thing is to continue the direction of travel.
Yep.
Because people are turning up and watching this with a sense of excitement and energy that they haven't had for a long time. And as long as that continues, no one's going to be disappointed. They may be slightly frustrated, but it's a sense of everything is going in the right direction. There's joined up thinking across the club. There's a team and a framework for success. And we haven't had that for so long. And I think that's the real positive. And therefore, whatever happens at the end of this season, it's been a good season, unless it all starts to peter out. And I don't think it will, because I think that the only reason it would do that, if we had another cataclysmic run of injuries. And I think we've had our share of injuries.
Should have been due a breakdown, surely.
And you know, and maybe some of the others get their injuries. Spurs have been without both their centre halves.
Yep.
What would Arsenal be like without both of their centre halves?
Absolutely.
Nowhere near. You know, they're. I mean, I think Saliba's the best centre half in the league this year. I think he's absolutely fantastic. They were without him for four games last season and fell apart.
Yeah.
You know, one player. So we've done incredibly well despite a catalogue of injuries, which, you know, I've seen World War battlefields with fewer injuries than Spurs have had. And so it's been remarkable. And they are where we didn't think they were going to be. And let's just, long may it last. Let's enjoy the ride.
Yeah, I do agree. And again, we know this talk of Antonio Nusa is hanging over us, a very much young player, gifted player, 18 years of age. I mean, Do you like those kind of those moves, Martin? The fact of going for some of these players? I mean, we've seen the likes of obviously the way they contracted Sarr and Adogie, young player loaning back and potentially one really, really exciting for the future.
Yeah, look, I'm willing to trust the people who are making the recruitment decisions because they're making a lot of good ones.
Yeah.
Kulusevski and Bentancur, I wasn't sure about. How wrong was I? Fantastic signings, absolutely. So the majority of the signings that they've made over the last 2 years have been pretty good. So why would you think that, you know, there's no guarantee that anyone will be, any individual one will, but the majority have been really good. Let's assume that this one's going to be good. Let's not worry about it. And if it isn't, then we'll deal with it.
Yeah.
Then, we'll, you know, we still get most of the money back. And you move on. You know, some players don't work, but no, you don't lose anything by having a go. And if the cost isn't silly and he's a young player, so he's going to be value added, then have a go. Don't worry about it. If it doesn't work out, move on.
Yeah. This is, I mean, the vibe of them, isn't it? It is, as you say, having a go. Look, Martin, it has been always fabulous. I really always enjoy having you on here. So again, thank you so much for your time. And are we on the route to a potential winner here in Ange? Do you feel now, it's exciting times again?
I like it. I really enjoy it. I'm having fun. I'm enjoying myself. I want to watch Tottenham play.
Yeah.
Every game. Yeah. Even if they don't win, you know you're going to see something to make you feel, yeah, that's it. That's
agreed.
You've got to remember that most teams, most fans, when you go to a game, the chance doesn't end in a goal. The move doesn't end in a goal. The match might not be won. You go for the moments that are the good moments and you revel in those moments. And you feel there's going to be more great moments and good moments under this manager in each individual game and over the course of the season than we've seen in a very, very long time. And that's what we do it for, because it is an escape from our real jobs in our real lives. It's football. It isn't life and death. Shankly was wrong. It's just a sport, and it's supposed to be fun, and it's supposed to be entertainment. And yeah, you want to win, but it isn't the be-all and end-all of our lives. It is just football, and I love football, and it's been my life, and it's been my career. It's what I've done for 50-odd years. I still go and watch Saturday morning, Sunday morning football with my son playing. I still go. I watch every game I can on the telly or in the flesh. I love football, but it's only football, and it's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
Now I'm watching Tottenham, and it's fun again.
Oh,
and that's all I ever asked for.
Martin, we've got to leave it on that point, because it doesn't get any better than that. It is fun. It is enjoyable. It's always happy to see you, my friend. Listen, thank you so much. Guys, thank you so much for the very, very kind words. There's been lots of love pouring in for Martin Lipton. I've got to say, on his return to last one on Spurs. Isn't it easier when things are like this? It really, truly is. Look, thank you so much for all your support. From the wonderful Martin Lipton, listen, from myself, we have been the last one on Spurs. Please, as always, keep safe, keep well. Thank you for all your genuine support. And as always, we'll see you soon. And come on, you Spurs.
Sports Social Podcast Network.